Next up, we have Kip Lornell. Kip has been on the faculty of George Washington University since 1992. He's the author of 14 books on vernacular music since 1970, covering everything from bluegrass to go-go, but he is going to stay on the bluegrass line with us here and talk about the early days of Rebel Records. So please welcome Kip Lornell.
I'm not used to being tethered to a microphone like this because when I teach, I usually walk around a lot, as Stephen Wade, who's been actually in residence at GW this past year, knows quite well. So as long as this doesn't fall off, and I stay by the, let's see if we can get that, because that is a bit,
that's perilous.
That is perilous.
There we are.
There, that's less perilous. Okay. I'm also used to looking out and seeing less gray hair. I feel like I'm teaching, in many respects, my students' parents and grandparents, of which I could be either one of them at this point. This is also a bit of a homecoming for me since I went to graduate school at Chapel Hill, and our youngest daughter has just finished her first year as a student at Chapel Hill. So it's a nice place to come back to. On this trip down, I came down the Shenandoah Valley because part of what I wanted to do was to stop by to see Dick Freeland, who now lives in White Sulphur Springs, but Dick has emphysema badly, and he basically said, not feeling well enough. I also was going to go by and see Bill Clifton, who's just back from Europe, but he is not in town this week. He's up near Beckley, West Virginia, at his summer place. So in both accounts, at least before I left, I knew I wasn't going to be stopping there, but as of last week, I wasn't sure. But that also leads me to shout out to two people who are sitting here, and really leads back to what we talked about earlier today in the first session. Dave Freeman, whose box set of Rebel Records came out in the mid-19, basically covers Rebel Records up to the mid-1990s with very good notes by Bill Vernon, is very informative. And also, if you need to know anything about Bill Clifton, Richard Weiss's box set on Bill Clifton has an excellent book. So those are two things that have been references for me, because the genesis for this particular presentation is, I think, my next-to-next book, and that is a book on bluegrass in Washington, D.C. for Oxford University Press, which I've written parts of at least three chapters on so far, and this has spurred me to start writing about recording bluegrass in D.C. I'm also much more hardcore than Jay. Jay actually has photographs of people. You ain't going to see no stinking people on here. You're going to see record labels. And I also, as I was putting this together, with Jay's help, by the way, you're going to see labels that are from my collection and also Jay's collection, and Jay was very helpful both with the audio, because I have short clips from some of the selections, but also in helping scan labels, too. So I have also learned since teaching at the university level since 1998, you don't want to give just a lot of facts when you are doing a presentation like this, because I'm used to standing up in front of college students several times a week and presenting and professing that I know things. And if I can get two or three points across in a hour and 15 minute class, that will do well. And I've also learned, if you really need to know when John Coltrane was born or when Bill Monroe died, it's in the book. I can tell you about when it was, but I'm presenting larger facts and information. And as I was putting this together, yeah, it focuses on Rebel Records, but I said, you know, we really need to talk a little bit about recording bluegrass in D.C. starting in the late 1940s. So it's partly a primer on recording bluegrass in D.C. Up to Rebel Records, and then focusing on Dick Freeland's Rebel Records when he owned it from about 1959 to 1980. I don't normally have anything that I read. I typically do things off the top of my head at classes, but in this case I do actually want to quote from Bill Vernon's notes, and then I will dispense with them. So this is, I think, the introduction to Bill Vernon's Rebel Records box set notes, and I'm quote, co-founder and eventual sole owner through 1979, Charles R. Freeland had always had a robust interest in bluegrass music, as had his high school friend, Bill Carroll. Buzz Busby's weekly television show, Hayloft Hoedown, had spearheaded the popularity of bluegrass in the Washington area. Carroll had been booking shows for Buzz and occasionally for Reno and Smiley. When Buzz returned to his native Louisiana to join the prestigious Louisiana Hayride, Bill leased for his Carroll label a Buzz Busby 45 that had originally appeared on Jiffy, which was a West Monroe, Louisiana label. By the time of Carroll's second release, Dick Freeland had become Bill's partner, and by November of 1959, Dick and Bill decided to form a new label, and so with a third partner, Sonny Zapp Compton. Now that's a pretty good name, Zapp Compton. The Rebel label was born. So as I was putting all this stuff together, I decided that it would be interesting to see what other labels were around in the Washington, D.C. area and were recording bluegrass before there was a Rebel in 1959 or 1960. And as I said, these labels come from both Jay and myself. The earliest recordings of bluegrass, if you look at the middle there, you'll see the D.C. label, which actually is Washington, D.C., and I often tell my students, you want to think about the early recording industry, you talk about Columbia Records, we're talking about the District of Columbia and Washington, D.C. before they moved to New York. So, you know, you don't think of Washington, D.C. as a center for recording. In fact, it's not been a center for recording to the same degree as New York or other places, but it certainly was there early on. So we have a version of Orange Blossom Special. Is that pronounced Gray? Is that how they pronounce it?
Gary.
I'm sorry. Oh yeah, I'm looking at. I've got a skewed look at this. Now I can actually see it better. Marlboro label. They were running an auto repair shop in suburban Maryland in the 1950s. And after this 1947 or 48 DC, this Marlboro from the early 1950s represents some of the earlier recordings of bluegrass. You see the Carroll label there. That's the Carroll label we're talking about. You may be able to read Cheverly, Maryland. Cheverly, Maryland is barely over the line in Prince George's County, Maryland, not very far from where the Marlboro release was done, which is in District Heights, Maryland. The Adelphi record, well, Adelphi has a special place. If you know the Washington, D.C., we have Adelphi, Maryland, but we also have a number of, it's a common name around there in terms of place names, and Benny and Valley Kane, and I have a Rebel selection by them in a little while, is a vanity pressing from 1955 or 1956. There are a couple other things on the Adelphi label, but this is another example of yet more pre-Rebel recordings. There we go. Buzz Busby, an important and interesting character in Washington, D.C., in the bluegrass scene. You mentioned his television show. Like so many things, there are no surviving clips of his television show from the 1950s. Which is a shame. Buzz has been well documented over the years, and if you look at those labels, you'll see a wide variety from Starday, which means that got some national distribution, to the World Music label, which is local, and I had mentioned the Jiffy label earlier. Jan Records, if I had actually printed the label, you would have seen Laurel, Maryland, which again is a suburb closer to Washington, D.C. than it is Baltimore, but it's in between. It also has, I just think, the distinction of Laurel, Maryland can be in Montgomery County, Prince George's County, Howard County, or Anne Arundel County. And you can still be in Laurel, Maryland. So that may be a world record of some kind. And speaking of Buzz Busby, if we could have that first track on that CD, you'll hear Buzz performing from a slightly later time. In fact, that's the flip of the Carroll record that is on the cover. Is that right? Oh, okay. Recorded several times. So that's why I have my men up here, because they can set me straight, because I know this stuff, but they know it better than I do. So if you could hit track one for us, please. Thank you.
baby racing on a flat short track from a Cadillac from your house on Eddie Town. The red wagon hadn't been riding in since I was a mountain.
Like to enlighten us on that little faux pas that you and I created?
Yes, I transferred the wrong track. I transferred your red wagon, which is another outstanding Buzz Busby track.
Ah, okay. Well, so much for getting everything perfect. Non-rebel labels, well into the 1960s and 70s, indeed well into the present time, there's lots of independent recording activity in Washington, D.C. You can see Bethesda, Maryland, represented there on the far left. Patuxent Valley Boys, Patuxent River. So we have, again, place names, which are always important in bluegrass and other kinds of music. We're actually going to skip to the third selection as the next one, because we have Feud and Grass up there by Leon Morris. And you can see where my hometown is represented for on that middle label, Folly. And I now reside in Silver Spring, though less than 1 mile from the D.C. line, and both of our children are native Washingtonians. So let's hear, all of these are, 40 to minute 10 excerpts. If you think you know what Feuding Grass sounds like, I think you will be right, because you will see it will be remarkably like other versions that have feuding in their title. I looked at my track 4. Also, we're on this particular slide, Glenmar. If Pete Kuykendall was around, he is responsible for this. When he was living in Falls Church instead of further out, he had a small record company that put out a number of records. I see 1003, but this was not a long-lived series at all. And finally, Blue Ridge Records, which is at this point in Vienna, Virginia, which is a near suburb of Washington, D.C., Jim Eanes had recorded for other labels in the 1950s and the 1960s. Blue Ridge also recorded, of course, the Stanley Brothers, and they had a fairly extensive catalog, an important local label that was around. These recordings, I think Dave could probably correct me if I'm wrong, I'm thinking 1962 to 1964, in that time period there is when I'm thinking of for Blue Ridge. Ben Edelman, very quickly. We have a lot of Ben Edelman recordings. He had a recording studio in Washington, D.C., and if you look at the credits for the choral release, you'll see K. Edelman. So along with doing a lot of recording, you will find out that the Edelman family was also involved with publishing, which turned out to be important. And they recorded not only bluegrass, but country and other things. So that's an important recording connection with Washington, D.C., and these are just bluegrass examples. Okay, early rebel releases. Starting in the early 1960s, mostly we're looking at 45s for rebel. You'll see Mount Rainier, Maryland, and there ain't no stinking mountain anywhere near Mount Rainier. But Mount Rainier is really the first suburb you come into when you leave Washington, D.C. and come into Prince George's County. These are early releases on Rebel. One that I don't have up here, but that represents very traditional bluegrass. Cut number two, Earl Taylor, will give you some sense of what very traditional bluegrass sounded like on Rebel early on. Of the early Rebel material on 45 is really very traditional stuff, and that to me is the when you're talking about bluegrass recordings around Washington D.C. between about 1960 and the early 1970s, then it starts to get a little bit more interesting. Oh, I forgot. Very quickly, Rebel is a reissue label. We have a leasing by Dick Freeland of a recording that was done in Warrenton, Virginia, and then eventually leased and got slightly better distribution, and that was my most creative effort to date using, I know when Jay looked at it, he looked at it and said, you sure you want to do that? And I said, yeah. The Country Gentlemen represent Newgrass for a very different approach. You can see the variety of things that were recorded by the Country Gentlemen. They ended up being a very controversial group and very talented group. They engendered a lot of discussion of to whether what they did was actually real bluegrass or not in the 1970s in particular. We have them covering Graham Nash's Teach Your Children, Here's to You, Mrs. Robinson, and then, of course, Bringing Mary Home. Finally, since I'm running out of time, we have to, I will invite anybody who lives in the Washington area to sing along with this. If you are not familiar with this song, I thought about getting the words and handing them out, but if we could go to the final track, track number 7, you can see how the Seldom Seen, which was somewhat of an offshoot of the Country Gentlemen, handled this song, which is well known in the Washington area to anybody who follows sports. Just close by observing that one of the things that came out very clearly this morning was the importance of passion in doing these things. The first person I interviewed after I started doing serious interviews for this book was Mike Aldrich, who was the dobro player on there. And Mike lived 2 miles from me in Silver Spring, and you know he had been fighting cancer for a while and was passed away about a year and a half ago, which was the last time I saw Mr. Barry Poss, who I know is around today. That was a very well-attended service. Things that are around now that Chris saw in Louisiana in 1960 or Dave Freeman was listening to in the late 1950s, it's around us now, but that's not always going to be around there. And in fact, at least two other people I've interviewed for this book in the last couple years have passed away. So we may think about bluegrass as a fairly modern American music, really from the 1940s on, but it's interesting how important things, whether they're people or recordings or photographs, have a tendency to slip away, and it's important to be able to document them and put them out in box sets that are illustrated in Rebel Records and illustrated by Richard Weiser, because that kind of stuff is important. Thank you.